This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
The palm oil industry is currently laboring through uncertain times, with poor demand and unpredictable weather and labour conditions sending prices to multi-year lows. Add the spectre of a looming trade war with one of its biggest markets, Europe, due to accusations of a poor environmental, human and animal rights record, and the stage is set for a perfect storm of headwinds for the industry. To make some sense of these uncertainties and to get a picture of what might lie ahead, I welcome Mohd Haris Mohd Arshad, the Managing Director of Sime W Oils, and Greenpeace Malaysia campaigner Heng Kia Chun, to help shed some light on these ever-so pressing issues in this special panel on the palm oil industry. Gentlemen, welcome. Now, Greenpeace says the palm oil industry is responsible for massive deforestation, among other environmental transgressions, while the industry themselves say they have put processes in place that ensure their produce is sustainable. Who's right and who's wrong? Haris, perhaps we can start with you.
Good morning, Chuang. Thank you for being here. It's a real pleasure. The question of whether who's right or who's wrong perhaps need to be rephrased to the point where what is the industry doing to tackle the issue of deforestation? Because at the heart of all this is the fact that there's an argument that palm oil is the major cause of deforestation. But I think I'd like to set the record straight here that if you look at the level of deforestation that's happened over the last 10, 15 years, oil palm is not the biggest deforestator or cause of deforestation. It starts with cattle. The cattle industry is by far the biggest, followed by soybean, maize, or corn, and then oil palm. However, the issue of deforestation in oil palm is that it leads to a deforestation of high carbon stock forests, and therefore leading to emission of greenhouse gases and so on. So whilst in terms of the level of deforestation is not big, but the severity of the deforestation has been a major cause of argument between all spectrums of those in the industry.
Heng, is there some perspective to be cast on this scenario? Because obviously Haris has set aside a very large and very macro picture of what deforestation has entailed. Do you have some perspective to add on this whole issue of deforestation, on which Greenpeace has itself been very, very critical about?
Okay, first of all, I want to introduce Greenpeace first. Greenpeace is an independent campaigning organization. We do not accept funding from government, corporation, or political parties. And one more thing, Greenpeace is against deforestation. We want to highlight that palm oil is not the problem. The problem is how it is grown, which is deforestation. Greenpeace also has campaigns against deforestation for palm oil, deforestation for pulp and paper, deforestation for animal agriculture. And in Southeast Asia, the main driver of the deforestation are palm oil plantations and pulp and paper. That's why Greenpeace is like campaigning against palm oil, and we'll make sure that all these palm oil are deforestation free.
So we've established something here. Deforestation is a reality. Haris, you say that palm is only one of several industries to deforest our jungles. And Heng, you say that specifically in Asia, I think is your perspective here, the palm oil lobby and the pulp and paper industries are the most responsible. Where do we stand on this issue? Because it's not as if it's not happening. It is happening. But I think it's the scale of which it is happening that is the real issue here.
The industry has moved on, Chuang, to one where we understand and we try to sort of hide behind the fact that there are companies that have been deforesting, to one where we're not adopting the so-called NDPE, which stands for no deforestation, no peat, and no exploitation. And this is actually started from 2014 when at the New York Declaration on Forests, there is a drive to take deforestation out. So what it says here is that by 2020, we want to halve the rate of deforestation, and by 2030, we're going to halve deforestation. So it's been adopted by responsible producers such as Sime W Plantation, and we are not putting that action on the ground. We have made it clear that we will not deforest. And hence, what it means for us as a company is how do we then improve our efficiencies? Because we need to produce more as time goes by, but without necessarily clearing any more virgin forests.
Well, 2014 and then 2030 seems to be quite generous timetables, given where climate change is. Despite the US president denying that such a phenomenon exists, climate change is a reality. Hing, how would you respond to Harris's suggestions?
I will say that we are now in the climate emergency now. So what we need to do, we have to, like we say, like palm oil is not the problem, but palm oil industry still has deforestation problem. So what we need to do, we have to like we engage with the industry, with the governments. We need more people to work together to have like deforestation-free supply chain. And most importantly, by 2020, all these global household brands, they make a commitment to have an NTP, no peat, no deforestations, no exploitations. We need them to enforce it.
So I think the larger issue is not just Sime Darby, because obviously you're just one cog in the larger scheme of conglomerates involved Indeed. In the business, but it's also your wider ecosystem, your suppliers, your business partners, of which you might have less control over, which rather than in Malaysia, for example, Indonesia is a huge country, massive archipelago. Can you guarantee their sustainability, Harris?
It is a journey, Chuang. So if you look at our own footprint, Sime Darby produces about 2.6 million tons of oil palm, of which all of it are certified as sustainable, and we comply to the NDPE policy. Against that, Sime Darby Oils processes about 4 million tons of oil palm. And you can see the imbalance there, where we need to procure palm oil from third parties. The industry is, in a way, it has a fairly complex supply chain, right? So I have to buy from third-party growers, from my competitors, from my peers, and so forth. So the word guarantee is actually a strong word, but it's a journey towards that. So our NDPE policy is a starting point, but more importantly, it's hard to actually operationalize that on the ground. And we have a few initiatives that we have already undertaken, including having a system called CrossCheck, which is actually a platform that we've developed 2 years in the making, to ensure that we're able to firstly trace where all our oils come from, both internal as well as third party. And then, in addition to that, be able to identify what are the potential issues that could happen on the ground. And when we see issues, what are the actions that we will take to rectify those issues? And if suppliers, third-party suppliers, do not comply to our requirement for NDPE, actions will be taken, including suspension.
Well, from what you just said, less than half of your material input is from clean sources of which you can guarantee. Heng, this is obviously not optimal from an environmental perspective. From Greenpeace's perspective, what level of alerts is this? Is this at red alert where you take, vociferous measures to address the issue, or are you still in neutral mode?
I will say, for your information, Greenpeace is a member of Palm Oil Innovation Groups, and this palm oil we call as POIG. This group is this charter is to improve the standards of RSPO to make sure all these the members to implement and to enforce the NTP policy because not all the we also found that not all the RSPO members enforce the NTP policy.
Well, here's the thing, right, both of you. You want the business to be sustainable and clean and good for everybody, but the offtake in terms of commercial demand is not there. You might be spending money, Harris, on making your ecosystem clean, but the buyers in Europe, specifically the guys that go to Waitrose and Sainsbury's and what have you, are not buying the more expensive clean product. So there is no commercial equilibrium here.
And that is a big challenge.
And that makes your journey less arduous, right? Because your wider ecosystem in Indonesia will say, "Well, I can't sell my stuff for a higher price. Why should I bother?"
So, when I said earlier about how convoluted the supply chain is, it actually is. So, take for example a sustainable producer in Kalimantan, who's trying to access a market in Europe. Now, unless this producer has the whole supply chain, he or she may not be able to get the products to where it is being demanded. And that is a challenge for the industry. Now, I think it's unfair to say that customers do not want to buy sustainable palm oil. Some of our major clients, major customers around the world actually do buy sustainable palm oil from us, and they do pay premiums. But that is still a niche market, if you like. Primarily, I think, because the availability or the ease to make this product available to the market is just not there at the moment. We tried, and we've been trying it for the last 7-8 years. with some degree of success, but it still remains a niche offering today.
On this special BFM panel on palm oil and the industry surrounding it, I am talking to Mohammad Haris, Mohammad Arshad, the Managing Director of Sime W Oils, and his counterpart in the environmental space, Greenpeace Malaysia campaigner, Heng Kia Chun. We're going to be coming back after this, both of you gentlemen, and we're going to be discussing the ongoing brewing trade war fracas between ourselves in Asia and the Europeans. BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U-Mobile.
On the Breakfast School this morning, I'm talking to Mohammad Haris, Mohammad Arshad, the Managing Director of Sime W Oils and Greenpeace Malaysia campaigner, Heng Kia Chun, and we're discussing, of course, the very tumultuous palm oil industry. Now, both of you are obviously aware of the disputes, in fact, a brewing trade war between the large Malaysian and Malaysian and Indonesian growers and the European lobbies over which they accuse us Asians of unsustainable farming practices and unsustainable agricultural practices. Greenpeace, Heng, is at the centre of this pushback on the industry. How would you describe the stage at which this fracas is right now?
I will say that sustainability is a must and it can be opportunities for the palm oil industry. Instead of saying that this is a challenge, the Malaysia palm oil industry can use this as an opportunity to prove that all the supply chains are deforestation-free. Showing that Malaysia palm oil is deforestation-free offers strong markets demands and strong markets approach.
But you just heard from Haris. He can't guarantee that his entire value chain is necessarily clean. Only, 45%, give or take, is within your realm? Well, the remaining 55 or 60 is not?
I wouldn't say I can't guarantee it's clean. What I said earlier was that of the 4 million tonnes of oil that we produce, that we process, about 2.5 come from our own supply chain. The other balance is from third party. And therefore, the role that we play as Sime W Oils is to ensure that the balance of oil that we buy from third party comes from a traceable source that do comply with NDPE policy. And that's a journey that we are taking right now. So I think it's not to say that it's not clean. It is actually an oil that still requires some work to ensure that it is fully traceable and is in compliance with our sourcing policy.
So in other words, you can't hand on heart say it's 100% traceable and clean because, as you say, it's a journey, Haris. The fact of the matter is the palm oil industry is right now in a state of crisis, as you say. And spot prices are somewhere around 2,000 ringgit per metric ton, and that's some way below most producers' costs. And a lot of them are bleeding, and bleeding millions every month. So between the both of you, what is the commercial way forward here? Heng?
I will say that currently, or maybe I can talk about the efforts by Malaysian governments. And recently, Malaysian government just announced Malaysia government just announced to protect the remaining forests and then to also to reform the palm oil industry. For us, I will say we welcome the efforts, but at the same time, this also highlight they also provide two opportunity. The first thing is to improve and also increase the productivity of the existing planted area and to provide some financial and technical support for the smallholder. The second one is to defend Malaysia's palm oil industry by proving that all these palm oil company doesn't involve in deforestation. Then how do we do that? So it's to allow Malaysian government need to allow palm oil company to publish the land title maps or concessions maps.
Well, the former MPUB President Tan Sri Yusof Basiron has always stated that the forest cover in Malaysia has remained at 50% for the last few years. And I've also read that Malaysia is proposing to cap planted acreage at 6.5 million hectares. And that obviously is moving in the right direction. Do you think, Heng, that the Primary Industries Minister, YB Theresa Kok, is doing a good job on this front?
I would say we need to check the curve because Malaysian government still hasn't published any concessions maps yet. So we need to check it first before we comment on about this.
So you think she should be doing more?
Yep, she should be doing more.
How would you respond, Haris?
Well, we work very closely with the ministry and I can say that YB Theresa Kok is one of the most accessible ministers I've dealt with. Very personally involved in campaigning for oil palm around the world. But before I comment on that, I just want to clarify one thing, though. In terms of traceability, for us in Sime W Plantation or Sime W Oils, 98% of all the oils that we procure, whether internal or external, are traceable. So the issue is, it is traceable, but there are other issues on the ground that we need to rectify. But coming back to your question, Chuang, about the government, as I said, the ministry has been, what you can't fault them is their effort. And I think YB Teresa and the members of the Ministry of Primary Industries have been working very hard to promote palm oil, not only for its sustainability credential, Malaysian palm, but also for its health benefits. I'm talking about the use of red palm oil, the use of tocotrienol, some of the high value adding products that we produce, which are deemed to be healthy. Because the challenge that we face in this industry are twofold. One is we're talking about deforestation and the unsustainable practices. The other is the unfair view that palm oil is not healthy. Right? And it's high in saturated fats and all of that. But this is a myth that we also need to clarify. And industries are doing that.
I think that's a myth which is secondary in nature, because I think the Europeans and the buyers over there are more wary of the fact that orangutans are being displaced in their natural habitats and villages are being taken out from their natural living conditions. I think that's the centerpiece of these conditions. And Greenpeace themselves are the center of this pushback. So that's not... One would say that the PR campaign postulated by the primary industries minister, Theresa Koch, is not directed in the right direction. She should be talking to the Europeans specifically. Heng?
Yeah, I will say that instead of blaming like Europeans for like boycotting palm oil, like against Greenpeace, we say like boycotting is not the solution. The way is to prove that palm oil is deforestation free. So what governments can do right now is to allow all these palm oil companies to publish their maps and to prove the transparency. Because showing Malaysians palm oil doesn't involve the deforestation. Actually, they have a strong, they can provide a strong market. And at the same time, all this, I will say, Malaysian governments can actually engage more to the small farmer to make sure that all they can have a responsible or clean palm oil.
So right now, the industry is in a state of limbo, right? That's, I think, quite clear. A lot of, anecdotally at least, industry guys tell me that more should be done to invigorate the industry. What do you think, from your point of view, can the Malaysian government do in terms of low-hanging fruit to reinvigorate the industry? Maybe start with you, Heng.
Okay. Because against like showing Malaysia, so the first point, boycotting palm oil isn't the point. Okay, the first point, palm oil is not the problem. The problem is how it is grown. So showing palm oil with deforestation free actually offers a strong market. So the Malaysian government can offer all these solutions. If Malaysian government can prove that all this palm oil is deforestation free, they can sell it in a better price, and it can like they can also defeat their competitors.
Why do you think the government is not revealing land titles and the maps right now?
I would say this is also our questions. So we are in touch with the Ministry of Primary Industry. We hope they can allow all this company to publish the concessions map.
What's your educated guess as to why this is not happening?
Oh, this one we have, I would say, we have no comment yet.
Because it's quite clear, right? Because if the land titles and maps were revealed and made public in the public domain, then the European market might be somewhat comforted by what's going on, and maybe the truth somewhere when it's out there will be revealed, and less of this dispute would be happening. What's your educated guess, Iris?
Well, today it is decreed by law that we are not allowed to disclose our concession maps.
Why is that? On what basis is this law legislated?
I don't know, to be honest. Right? There could be some legacy considerations. However, the ministry has actually asked for this to be reviewed. And I believe that the current government is looking at as to whether this law should be repealed. But we've not heard what is the status of that. But I do know that there's been a matter that's been proposed to the parliament.
If these titles and maps were to be revealed, how much of an impact would it have in terms of comforting the anti-palm oil lobby in Europe, in your opinion?
I don't think it necessarily will do anything.
Will it move the needle?
No.
What moves the needle then?
What moves the needle in our view is the companies itself, not the concession per se. So when people are concerned about unscrupulous practices, it's not so much about where your plantations are located and so forth. It's the companies that actually are involved in this business. I might have a concession in Malaysia, and I might have a concession in Papua New Guinea, and I might have a concession in Indonesia. and that's Sam Darby, for example. If I have a problem in Papua New Guinea, for whatever reason, my entire operation will be affected. So it's the company that is the issue and not necessarily the concession, right? So a lot of the issues around sustainability has now moved from certification, which you look at a concession-based approach, to a much broader company-wide approach. So it's the company that is more that people are more concerned with as opposed to where your operations are.
But the industry is highly fragmented, and it's not as if it's just a market leader, even though there are the Wilmars of this world and the Sime Darbys of this world and the PT Astra Agros of this world. It is still very, very fragmented, especially among smallholders in Indonesia. And we know how large an archipelago that is. Mm-hmm. Did Wilmars pledge to have a 100% no deforestation policy in 2014 mitigate these concerns at all?
I will say this one, we cannot just rely one company to do it. We need all the palm oil industry, all the industry that it consumes palm oil or vegetable oils to make commitments.
So what is the problem? Why doesn't everybody just pledge to this and everybody move along? Why is there so much inertia in the industry, in your opinion?
I will say that we need all these bigger players like Wilma, Sam Darby, and other palm oil company to make commitments. Like at the same time, they also have to demand their supply chain, their supplier to make the commitments. Then we can solve the problems.
So who has not pledged and who has pledged?
Greenpeace last year released a few reports. We exposed some of the companies that they are involved or violated all these environmental regulation and also caused deforestation. That's why Greenpeace started the campaigns.
So who are they?
Yeah, I will say last year we campaigned against Wilmars, and then now we are asking them to enforce their policy, NTPA policy.
How many percent of the global value chain is Wilma?
Okay, this one I cannot comment on it because,
Why not?
I will say I need to check the data.
Okay, there will be at least a large percentage,
yes,
right?
Yeah.
Because they're the biggest dogs in the room, right? Why do you think Robert Kwok is not signing up to this? Why do you think Matuasi Torres is not signing up to this?
Do you want to comment?
Well, you're the tree huggers here, King.
Okay.
You tell us.
Okay, I will say we want to target because they are the biggest player. And they want to. We need them to enforce all these NTP policies. So we need them to prove that their palm oil is deforestation free.
So if they were to pledge to this, would it move the needle? Would it make you retract some of your campaign against the palm oil lobby?
Oh yeah, of course. Because they are one of the biggest players, so we need them to make commitment. But at the same time, we also have to ask lobby other industry to work together.
On this special edition of the BFM panel on palm oil, I'm talking to Mohamed Haris Mohamed Arshad, the Managing Director of Sime Darby Oils, and Greenpeace Malaysia campaigner, Heng Kia Chun. Obviously, gentlemen, this is a discussion which warrants more explanation, so we're going to be coming back after the 8:30 news with a little bit more of your insights, BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
On the grill this morning, I'm talking to Mohamed Haris Mohamed Arshad, the MD of Sime Darby Oils, and Greenpeace Malaysia campaigner Heng Kia Chun. Now, gentlemen, last we left it, we seem to have come to a bit of an impasse in terms of where the industry can go forward, in terms of invigorating the industry. In your opinion, is Malaysia's activity in the biofuels space something which can move the needle in terms of taking up some of our production, for example, in B7? Haris, maybe we'll start with you.
Yes, thank you. I think the short answer to that is yes. If you look at the growth of demand over the last 5 years, we have seen the biggest demand growth coming from biodiesel, primarily out of Europe, Indonesia, and then way down the line is Malaysia.
So Indonesia is at B15 now, and we have
B20.
B20.
Yeah.
Okay, that's a long way from Malaysia. Why has Malaysia been so slow on this front?
I think there is the concern about how biodiesel would affect cars, diesel cars, right? There has been pushback from car manufacturers here in Malaysia, and I think the government has been trying to fully understand the issues before implementing it. Indonesia, of course, takes perhaps a bit more hardline approach. They said B20, get it done, right? But that said, Malaysia has made a commitment that by the year 2020, we want to go up to 20% inclusion. So we are heading there, but perhaps not as quick as our Indonesian counterparts have been.
Hey, what's your opinion on this development in terms of perhaps sustainability in sustainably invigorating the industry? Are there any concerns on this particular leg of the value chain?
For Greenpeace, we think that the biofuels made from all this, no matter it's palm oil or other vegetable oil, is not a solution for climate change. Because palm oil, I mean, all these biodiesels, biofuels from all this palm oil, we should keep it, maintain it as a food, not to burn foods for energies. Because the solutions for all these vehicles is renewable energy. That's why government should push more 100% renewable energy instead of biofuels.
That's a good point. How would you respond, Harris?
Mm. Well, oil palm is renewable in that sense, right? I mean, it comes from trees, soya.
But there's nonetheless emissions, and emissions reduction is the order of the day where climate change is concerned.
If you look at emission reduction, let's talk about sulfur, right? So the maritime industry has said that by the year 2020, they will enforce a new ruling to reduce sulfur emission from 3.5% to 0.5%. And we reduce sulfur emission, one of the easiest ways to do it is to include biodiesel. Because biodiesel has negligible, if not zero, sulfur. So when we talk about emission, we talk about that, right? And I believe that vegetable oil as a renewable source is indeed renewable. Of course, the question is economics, right? Whether does it make sense for you to use biodiesel versus conventional fuel? And this is where governments in particular have to take a stronger stance if they want to actually reduce carbon emission, whilst at the same time address these low prices that you talked about earlier.
So as you say, again, sulfur reduction is another journey by itself. It seems as if both of you can't seem to meet in the middle on anything, whereas the industry right now is going through, laboring through tough times. Mm. How does it all end, Heng?
I would say that because the population is growing, so we need to maintain or keep all this palm oil or other vegetable oil as a food. So I will say the solution is that we cannot put like palm oil as a biofuel.
So what activities are you doing? What kind of action measures are you taking to maybe not going to biofuels and to reduce applications offtake into the automotive space? What are you doing on that front?
I would say there are better alternatives. So the better alternative should be renewable energy. And all these renewable energies from solar energy and wind energies.
So Greenpeace Malaysia and Sime Darby, obviously different sizes. Mm. How do you plan to do this?
So I will say we still need to work hard. I will say it's, we have to work closely to achieve some consensus.
Policymakers in Indonesia and Malaysia are moving inexorably into biofuels. You can't seem to stop this progress. Indonesia's at B20, Malaysia's wants to be B7, obviously. Do you think that your efforts are futile, Heng?
I would say we need to work more, but I was against. We need all this industry to work together to solve this climate emergency. Otherwise, we all are suffer. We all get benefit from this palm oil, but at the same time, the palm oil industry still have to fix its the deforestation problem. If we still allow more biofuel for vehicles without looking for better alternative renewable energy, we will face more disaster.
Well, the contribution of the agribusiness industry to Malaysia is indisputable. It's at least between 5 to 10% of GDP, depending on which estimate you read. And let's get constructive here in the last 3 minutes of this interview, both of you. What is the way forward for the Pakatan Harapan government in terms of moving this industry to the next step and also in terms of comforting the anti-palm lobby from the European market? Maybe we start with you, Heng, and we end with you, Harris.
Okay. Malaysia government has a very important role to prove that palm oil industry is deforestation-free. So the ball is with the government. So the way to do it, the next action point should be allow all this palm oil industry to publish their concessions map, proving all this palm oil industry is not driving deforestation or offer strong markets.
Harris?
Yeah, I think that at the heart of it is the problem of low prices. And that's not an easy one to solve. You can't solve it immediately. But there are a couple of things which I think should be a point of focus. One is we need to think of a strategic blueprint, if you like, for how we can go into higher value-adding downstream activities for the country. And secondly, is about how do we then improve smallholders' conditions. The issue with smallholders, of course, is low productivity. So is there a way for us to improve the levels of productivity so that it's comparable to those of a plantation or estate yields. So these are the two things that I think we should do, or the government should work with industries to address?
Well, during the entire course of this discussion, no mention of technology was said. Mm. I think that's the centrepiece, modernizing agribusiness. With technology, it's the centrepiece of Tun Mahathir's national agro-food policy between, I think, now and 2022.
No doubt.
How can this happen? Should this happen, Heng?
Yeah, okay. I believe innovations, I believe technology, new development of technology. And in this, by developing new technology, we shouldn't avoid the human rights exploitations. Like, again, we need all these companies to enforce NDPE. No deforestations, no peat on, no new developments on peat, and also no exploitation. As because some of the like palmer companies still involved in child labor, forced labor, and also retentions of passport. We need all this palmer industry to address these problems.
Okay, yeah, last
to
word.
Solve the problem.
Last word belongs to you, Harris. How would you respond?
Technology underpins our growth. Sunbe Plantation were the first company to fully map the DNA of oil palm, and we have commercially planted 1,000 hectares, another 1,000 hectares of our so-called genome select, which under ideal growing condition can yield above 9 tons of oil per hectare. Versus today, which is about 4 tons of oil per hectare. Right? Now, that is the use of technology to produce more palm oil on the given tract of land. If we do this throughout all of our Malaysian production, Malaysian land of about 300,000 hectares, we would have saved 50,000 hectares of land through better yield. Now, these are the kind of things that we need to look at, improving our productivity by better seeds and so forth. Mechanization is also another thing. How can we make full use of technology to reduce the dependency on labor? So today in Sandabi Plantation, we have this land-to-man ratio of about 10 hectares for every man. Now, can we go to 11? Can we go to 12? To address that problem, it is through the use of technology via mechanization.
Well, hopefully the next time we speak, gentlemen, our CPO prices will be somewhere north of 2,000 ringgit per metric ton. But in the meantime, let's hope every part of the equation works to reinvigorate the industry. So thank you for spending time with me.
Thank you.
Thank you for your insights. I was talking to Muhammad Harris, Muhammad Arshad, the Managing Director of Sime Darby Oils and Greenpeace Malaysia campaigner, Heng Kia Chun. This was the BFM panel on Palm Mall, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile, Frost & Sullivan's Malaysia Mobile Service Provider of the Year.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.